I'm Jerry Krantman, and this is American Dream Radio. If you look around, it seems that the 2004 presidential elections are over and done with. Ask anyone. George W. Bush was elected to a second term, to the horror of some and the delight of others. Ohio is going to have a recount, though. If the results change, John Kerry could still theoretically become the president. Still, candidate Kerry and the Democratic Party seem strangely reluctant to really push for a fair recount, but have offered some support to those who are pushing for one. When the talking heads of corporate news mention this activity at all, it is to dismiss the chances of a reversal in Ohio as insignificant, and perhaps they are right. But mostly, corporate news sources are silent on the matter, and have turned Americans' tongues to clucking about other people's elections. Don't those Ukrainians know what it means to fight for democracy? So many of us watch their struggle and feel glad that our system works so well. The American people, undisturbed by the shocking testimony from Ohio voters, seem largely willing to follow along and put the elections behind them, and watch democracy on television. In the Ukraine, in Iraq, and in Afghanistan. We watch others do the democracy thing, but we're not showing much interest in doing the hard work of being vigilant about democracy in this country. In the absence of any information, Americans really have to seek it out if they hope to hear the voices of a threatened democracy here at home. Corporate news is ignoring the sworn testimony so many Americans go back to their football games and tell themselves that it's just a few un-American hippie dissidents causing all the trouble. Democracy is fine. With more politically aware friends, the words voter suppression are being uttered in frank, intimate discussions, usually with a shrug. What can you do? Fortunately for U.S. democracy, the 2004 election isn't over for everyone. The Green Party and Libertarian Party have joined together and raised enough money to pay the required recount fee and are forcing the votes to be recounted in Ohio, a recount that could possibly change the outcome of the presidential election. Others are trying to get Kenneth Blackwell, Ohio's Secretary of State, to recuse himself from the recount, that is, to stand aside and let the fairness of the recount be assured by someone other than the chairman of the Bush campaign in Ohio, Kenneth Blackwell. Meanwhile, speculation is that the Democrats are lying low so they won't risk being branded as sore losers in the 2006 elections and beyond. On December 9, 2004, I spoke with Bev Harris, the executive director of blackboxvoting.org, and a nationally recognized expert on the subject of electronic voting and fair elections. She is also the author of the book Black Box Voting, Ballot Tampering in the 21st Century. Ms. Harris and blackboxvoting.org are very involved in the still ongoing investigations into voting irregularities in the 2004 elections in Florida, Ohio, and elsewhere. In this 55-minute interview, Bev Harris talked about the post-election struggle to get the facts. Learn more about American Dream Radio on the web at americandreamradio.org. Bev Harris, welcome to American Dream Radio. So, how about those voting machines? I've been paying attention to the news, and there's hardly a word about them. They must have worked out great. Were you surprised?
Well, the truth is nobody knows how they worked out, except that in some places they definitely didn't work out great, because nobody has really done the checks and balances and the audits to find out. I shouldn't say nobody. There are some really excellent citizens who have gone out there and done their homework, and there's no question that the machines are not performing adequately. For example, in Pinellas County, Florida, the machines flipped the vote. They had the exact, you know, everything that was yes was no, and everything that was no was yes for a proposition. And you know how they always do this thing. They always come back and say, it was a glitch. Well, that's not a good enough answer at this point. Flipping an election is a serious thing. When we finished with Florida, we came up with at least four counties that really, really need intensive action and probably need to have their management replaced. because, you see, elections in the United States, even though there may be something that's more systemic that can happen on a national level, such as a weakness in remote access to a particular vendor's system, they basically break down at a county level. If you've got really good county officials who understand the real risk points with their software, which is a rare thing, actually, you can have good ones that don't understand it, well, then you're in good shape. But some of the officials that we are meeting, and particularly some of the ones in Florida, really need to be replaced. They're just not mm-hmm. working in the interest of the public. They're quite arrogant, and they look at their little voting system as, or their elections office as, their little private domain, and they don't seem to think it's anyone's business to know what they're doing back there. These problems surfaced in many different locations in the country, but they are only caught when you have very vigilant citizens who are very much involved in it. There is a citizens group in Pinellas County, Florida, that is very aggressive, smart, self-directed. It's got an excellent computer programmer who's involved in it. And so basically the fact that it was caught was more because there happened to be a citizens group watching.
So having people there made the difference to even knowing something was going on.
Because they were going over all of the numbers and saying, hey, this doesn't make sense.
Let me perhaps, just by way of background, ask what black box voting is. What are we talking about there?
Black box voting is a consumer protection group for elections. It's blackboxvoting.org, actually. And it is designed to make sure that we have elections that represent, first of all, that everybody can vote in, that's eligible to vote, and that mm-hmm. represent the vote that you actually cast, make sure it's counted correctly.
Where did that name come from?
It came from, I interviewed a gentleman by the name of Arnold Erkin, professor. He's at Stevens Institute. He started the very first testing lab for voting machines. And he said that there are two types of testing. There's black box testing and there's white box testing. Black box testing is where you don't really look inside the machine. You just run a few ballots through, and if it counts right, you know, you figure it's good. White box testing is where you actually go in and examine the source code. Well, when he started this testing lab, the voting machine vendors would not let him do the white box testing, and he refused then. He actually shut his lab down. He refused to do it because he said, if all I can do is black box testing, we don't really know what's going on in these voting machines. I won't put my name on it. So that's why they're black box voting machines.
I see. Okay. And you're trying to eliminate black box type voting machines?
Well, we're trying to make them auditable. And they certainly should not be black box. They should be white box if they're going to be used at all, meaning that they should be completely open sourced and available for very thorough examination of the source code and so forth. In addition to, they should certainly be transparent and able to be audited. And transparent doesn't mean plexiglass. It means that every step of the way, citizens can monitor the process in a meaningful way.
Mm-hmm. So the fact that the computer voting is faster and ostensibly more accurate, you're saying that we probably can't rely on the skilled professionals writing voting software for us. The companies that are in the business of making ATM machines and other equipment that we rely on every day.
Things with that. One is they're not actually faster. We're finding out that the more bells and whistles they have and the greater they're supposed to be, they seem to be slower. And the newer models are actually slower than the older models, which is quite interesting. And the other thing is they aren't necessarily designed by experts in computer science. In fact, one of the people who was a senior programmer for the Diebold system was a 23-count embezzler who had done 4 years in prison. We obtained his Department of Corrections documents, and he specialized in computer fraud. Now, he may have been an expert, but he's not the type of expert we want.
I see. Well, I think I had read, perhaps on your site, that there are that he's not the only felon in these groups.
No, that's true. Unfortunately, they have a long and colorful history. We'll just put it that way.
Mm-hmm. I guess you know. I was trying to lead back to what you were saying about the black box, and once these companies develop this software, Don't they have an obligation to their shareholders to keep it secret, to make it a trade secret, to copyright it, patent it?
Well, you see, if you patent something, you don't need to keep it a secret. And so that is something that they might want to do, is patent it and then make it completely open and above board so everyone can see it. They've decided not to patent it. A patent, of course, you register it, and it's your design is locked in so that such that other people cannot copy it without violating the patent. What they've decided to do is not patent it, but keep it as a proprietary trade secret, sort of like the formula to Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. Well, in a situation that is a public trust, like voting, that is just not appropriate.
If other people could see their source code, would that not make it less secure?
No, not necessarily.
I mean, could hackers find their way in?
Opening up the source code is not the wonderful panacea that everyone thinks it is anyway. It would be more secure than what it is now, because right now we have people that we don't even know from, we don't even know where, whose credentials we have no idea, a small handful of them writing something that we can't see. That's certainly not the way to run an election. Mm. However, a lot of people believe in the open source. It's not a bad idea, but it's not going to solve everything, because the solution is more complicated than that. For one thing, you could have open source code published on wherever it is and then go stick something else in a voting machine.
Uh-huh.
You see, there's ways that people can get around that have to do with plain old grease in the palms, you know, going ahead and paying somebody off.
Well, surely these voting machines are special equipment that's being manufactured that only runs this particular kind of software, or that would be things that people wouldn't ordinarily...
Oh, no. In fact, the central tabulators work on just a regular PC, and they run on Windows. In fact, I've got the central tabulator software on both of my PCs.
Uh-huh.
I went ahead and found the Diebold software and also the Sequoia software, and I've got it installed on my computer so I can show and demonstrate it to people.
Well, then this proprietary software must be hard to hack, because they must have tight security if they're using just a common Windows interface.
Well, what they actually did in Diebold's case was they disabled the security for remote access, which is quite a concern. They put the remote access in. Well, Windows comes with remote access, meaning someone can get into it from outside the system through a telephone line. But there are ways to protect that. However, in the Diebold system, most of the counties who use it do not do the updates, the Windows patches, you know, the ones that say, you know, if you don't put this patch in, anyone can get into your computer and do anything. They don't apply those. And there's quite a few problems with the security at almost every level in these systems. They say it's secure, but every time we've actually gotten hold of the real software, it is Swiss cheese. Walk right in, sit right down, do whatever you want.
Well, whose responsibility is it to see that this software is secure? I mean, is there not some government oversight here?
Not a lot. Actually, and that's really broken down, too, where they have an independent testing authority, supposedly. They call it the ITA. But it turns out that the ITA is paid by the vendors. And our organization, Black Box Voting, is one of the only organizations that has ever gotten an interview with one of the voting machine certifiers. And it turns out they really don't look at it very carefully at all. And he said, and I quote, "I don't like to put anything negative in the report because, of course, the vendors are paying me and they don't want anything negative in there."
Huh.
So that doesn't really bode well for making sure that it's an exhaustive security analysis.
We've got about 40 minutes left in this 55-minute interview with Bev Harris, nationally recognized expert on the subject of electronic voting and fair elections. She spoke with us on December 9th, 2004, about the ongoing investigation into the 2004 elections. This is American Dream Radio. Sounds like there's not really anybody looking out to make sure that these new machines are going to be fair, even though as they're incorporated into our election process.
Well, actually, I sometimes wonder, and this sounds very conspiratorial, but it's true, I sometimes wonder if some of the folks that are supposed to be looking out for us actually don't want the machines to be secure. And the reason I say that is I was able to obtain, again, it's very hard to obtain anything about what these private testing labs do, but I was able to get two of their testing reports for the actual voting software out there. And they had huge omissions. For example, they said they decided not to test the security or the tamperability because they decided it was not relevant. And nine people from the National Association of State Elections Directors, which is, they have a particular board which then certifies these and recommends them to the elections officials. Mm-hmm. Well, even though they saw this glaring omission in the report that said we decided not to test this at all for security, they signed off on it. And that really makes me wonder what was going on with these guys. Why would you sign off on something when you knew the report didn't test what it was supposed to test?
Huh. Well, that's a good question. Is anybody being asked that question?
I have heard that the parent company for the testing lab was asked that and said they didn't even know that they were testing voting machines, which was reassuring. and we have not been able to get any of the elections officials to go on record who actually certified this. Now, understand that there was eight or nine on this one board. There are some very good elections directors, and so that doesn't mean that all of them are out there doing irresponsible things. Mm-hmm. But there are some of them that are repeatedly doing irresponsible things, and they also happen to sit on this board. Denise Lamb from New Mexico is their state elections director, and she's been constantly pushing these unauditable systems. Dr. Britton Williams, who's a certifier or a testing guy from the state of Georgia, who is he writes some things that are pretty ridiculous on their face, you know, and then keeps signing off, and he's getting $50,000 a year for Georgia, and he's doing, you know, he's getting paid quite a bit of money to go around and tell everyone the Diebold system is good. So there's just a handful of people, but they seem to have worked themselves into a position of power.
Yeah, well, I was really surprised when the Diebold company makes ATM machines and a number of other machines like that. And at some point I had read that these voting machines are the only systems they make that they're selling and encouraging people to buy without a paper audit trail. I mean,
right.
Everything else prints receipts, I'm told.
And another thing about Diebold is their ATM division is completely and totally different, and it's in a different state and has completely different programmers, and there's no relationship between their ATMs and their voting machines. In other words, they were making these ATMs, and then they acquired another company out of Canada. And the company they acquired is actually the voting machine company. Then they left it pretty much intact. They didn't fold it into their corporation. They just left the people in Canada to program it and the people in Texas to build the things. Mm. And so, they wrapped their name around it saying, we've been making secure systems and we make ATMs. But what they didn't really reveal is this wasn't really anything they developed. They bought it out of Canada. It's an acquisition.
Well, now, I read recently, and I'm kind of intentionally leaving out names and leaving out the real specifics, but because of what I read on your site, but there's a programmer who has been quoted as swearing that a Republican former Florida state representative told him to write a computer program that would allow someone to stealthily change the results of voting software. He says he wrote it and delivered it, but because we don't know if it's true, I don't really want to name names and retell his whole story. But I know that you've written that you have your doubts about the importance of this, and was hoping you might say a few words.
It raised some questions. Now, what I did learn about it, I've been looking into it a little more, and there's a complicating factor in that there is a gentleman who wrote this deposition, and there's a different guy who wrote an article about it. The guy who wrote the article about it didn't, I think maybe his credibility may not be as good. And so what I think is the next step is to see the guy who wrote the affidavit, how credible he is. It's tough because if you have a story that's very damaging, you may have to go to a very alternative type journalist. But in this case, I don't know that the most credible journalist picked up the story. Mm-hmm. There are still some problems with the story. The idea was he was told to write this software. Now, what I have also found out is it didn't, as far as he knows, it was never used. and that really changes things a lot, makes it not mm-hmm. quite such a big story.
Mm-hmm.
It would be very, very interesting if indeed this Republican congressman actually did sit down with him repeatedly in meetings. But there are some anomalies in it, some real anomalies in that story. One of the biggest ones is if he then says he didn't put the software into the machines, he later says he filed a key TAM lawsuit, and key TAM is when the government bought something that's flawed with government funds. Well, if he didn't put it in, then how would the government have bought anything? So how would he have filed that suit? So some of it doesn't hang together, and they'll need to look at it some more. But, you know, I don't dismiss things too quickly, because I know I've done some very credible work, and initially it was dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
So just because it's not in the mainstream media does not mean that it's not true.
That always seems to be the way it is when people blow whistles or whatever is the
sure, you know, it's you have to just be careful, because this particular story is pretty explosive.
Mm-hmm.
And one way that you can fight the exposure of this stuff is to put out disinformation that sounds like the real thing but then is proven wrong. That's very, you know, kind of like what happened with Dan Rather.
And so if you pick it up, then you get discredited.
Right.
Yes.
So it's really walking through a minefield.
I understand. Well, let's maybe move on to the most relevant and current stuff, and that is what's going on in Florida now. What is the 2004 election over?
Oh, I don't think so. And I'm not even sure it'll be over when it's over. I think Ohio is very interesting, because Ohio just doesn't seem to have the the documents all in a row to support its numbers.
Mm.
But the question is, it's very tough when people are trying to run out the clock to really get answers. You know, whether or not Bush or Kerry won Ohio, whoever it was, what's going to be very difficult is finding out who actually won it within the time frame allotted. Because the records in Ohio were a mess, and they didn't account for things properly. So, you know, it takes a lot of forensic auditing, and there were a number of different ways where it broke down. Now, in Florida, that's going to take a while. There's no way that's going to happen before all things are certified and so forth, because, for one thing, we've had to sue a couple of counties just to get the records to begin to do an audit. And that's one form of stalling, is, you know, not give it to you in a timely manner and make you sue them, and then it has to go to court.
Well, now, the information you're talking about, if I understood it right, that you have filed the largest Freedom of Information Act request that's ever been filed, or asking for more information than anyone has ever asked for?
Well, yeah, that we did on election night.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked for some diagnostic or spot check type audit documents for the machines in every jurisdiction in the United States. We began collecting them in Florida, and to our not great surprise, but to our dismay, Palm Beach County, Brevard County, and some of these other counties flat out refused to follow Florida law and refused to give us the documents at all. And the documents, get this, one of the documents they refused to give us was the election night results. I mean, I don't see how you can say that's not a public document.
So they were actually saying these weren't public documents.
They didn't even give a reason. They just said, we're not going to give them to you. We think you're harassing us. Well, I'm sorry, but the Florida Sunshine Laws, which is what we filed that under, don't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just get to say, we think we don't want to give it to you, so we're not going to give it to you.
So they have to give you, what is the information again that you're asking for?
Well, we're asking for certain types of records that will help us ascertain whether they got the vote count correct.
Mm.
So, for example, one of the first thing we asked for is a list of any memos or letters back and forth between them and the manufacturer talking about problems. Well, when we got that for Volusia County, they, lo and behold, they said that they had 25... memory cards, which is like a ballot box,
uh-huh.
go bad on election day. That's like, you know, 20,000 votes.
Huh.
And they're, you know, and they're writing back and forth with the manufacturer, and then they had 35 more go bad right before the election, and there were some various, and they had 7 voting machines, you know, clunk out in the middle of the day. So that was one thing we asked for, is what's called the trouble reports. Another thing that we asked for was a very important record of the vote, which is On election night. Now, granted, the machines in the polling places could be manipulated or misprogrammed, but what they're supposed to do is they kick out a results tape. Each machine in each polling place kicks out a results tape, and the polling workers are supposed to sign that results tape and say, you know, we were here and this is what it said, so that it doesn't change sometime later on. So we asked for those results tapes, for the copies of them. And there again, some of the counties just said, oh, you can't have that. And Volusia County, which is a kind of a problem child, gave us results tapes that were not printed on election night. They were printed 2 weeks later and had no signatures. And when we insisted that they give us the election night version, a third of them were missing altogether, representing, by the way, about 50,000 votes. And it just got stranger and stranger. We then found some of the missing items in the garbage destined for the shredder. So,
oh, man.
Volusia County has a lawsuit pending right now. A citizen filed a lawsuit to actually set aside the election there. It's the anomalies there are very serious.
Is this where Teresa Lepore is?
No.
Who is Teresa Lepore, and why are you suing her?
They have a retiring election supervisor. Teresa Lepore is Palm Beach County. Now, we had to file a lawsuit against her because she was refusing to give up her records at all or wanting to make us wait until the cows come home. She has had citizens that she has stalled for, you know, months and months, and so we knew that if we didn't litigate, we'd never get them.
Hmm. So that's what's going on in the state of the president's brother.
Oh, well, you know, I'll break something here in the news.
Oh, please.
On your show. One of the things that we will be putting out later this week, we jumped in a dumpster, or actually opened a garbage bag, you know, in Volusia County and found all these things. Apparently, we inspired some other citizens to try the same thing. And guess what? Some of the same was found in other Florida counties.
Oh, really?
Including some things that were even more seriously problematic than what we found. So it seems that even though Florida law requires them to hang on to their records, all election records, for a period of almost 2 years, some of them seem to think that the definition of secure location means garbage can destined for the shredder.
So they actually were throwing out these records ahead of time. You know, this. In one county, we might say this was a one-in-a-million mistake, but if you've got several counties, it sounds like maybe...
Well, we have two counties now.
Two counties.
But I just thought, I couldn't believe it. That's actually right before we left the state, we went and videotaped. And by the way, the other citizens following our example, when they got it out of the dumpster, they videotaped the whole process to make sure there was no, you know, question
of
what was going on. Right. So it's good stuff.
Oh, man.
I have to say, what's going to salvage this whole thing is the people themselves, and not my organization running chapters in every state and giving everybody marching orders for what to do. That's actually a very corporate model. What will work is completely independent, self-initiated citizens going out and doing what makes sense to them. And maybe looking at some of what we do and taking some of that and trying that, because you just can't, you know, the American people are really smart. They're really clever. They're very innovative. And they're very stubborn. And, you know, I think what happens when the election system turns into this sort of mess that we've got now is that's not taking into account the really great spirit of the American people. They're not going to let it happen, and it's going to be taken back by the people themselves. We may be leading the pack or giving ideas for how to do it, but I think the real work is getting done by just regular people who aren't getting any particular kind of notoriety, and they're doing great things.
We've got about 25 minutes left in this 55-minute interview with Bev Harris, nationally recognized expert on the subject of electronic voting and fair elections. She spoke with us on December 9, 2004, about the ongoing investigations into the 2004 elections. This is American Dream Radio. Well, I'm sure you've been in Florida for some time. You just got back to home, Washington State. Were there a lot of people there working with you in Florida then?
No. The nature of this is that it's better to have a few people doing very, very good work than a lot of people running around. Auditing an election is tedious. It's boring. It isn't exciting unless you find something in the garbage or you happen to see something missing, you know. I mean, it basically, you're matching things up. All auditing is matching one thing up with another thing and making sure that they match. And so you're just doing this. It's kind of like, you know, if you ever turn on Law and Order on TV and the guys have to sit there and make, you know, 100 phone calls trying to find somebody. That's the kind of work it is. But citizens are starting to jump in and actually do that tedious work, and that's really what's needed, because what they're finding is all is not what they were told. You know, for example, it's not just Volusia County that has missing poll tapes. Palm Beach County also has missing poll tapes. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that they discover as they go through this, and then they hold the officials accountable. And the key, though, is to be relentless, because a lot of bureaucrats learn that if they just stall you long enough and obfuscate things, that people would just give up and go away. And the citizens that are making a difference are the ones that are just relentless. They just will not stop. They just keep coming back and asking until they get it.
Well, is there talk in Florida about a recount, or is that you're just doing an investigation?
It's too late for a recount, and it's too late for a contest. The contest in Volusia County was filed on the last day, so the citizen there did manage to get it in under the wire. But the thing is, people want to know, and they have a right to know. And if it's a situation where an elections official ran out the clock and then said, see, now it's too late, there are ways to litigate that. There are remedies to say, well, you know, you wouldn't give us the documents, and the documents showed. This is something real ironic. I have to share this with
you.
Yes,
please.
We had to sue Teresa Lepore because she wouldn't give us the documents. Mm-hmm. If we finally get the documents from her, and they show that there's something that's criminal or just wrong, it'll be too late to do anything. It'll also be, she was not reelected, and so she has another position. And her new position is, guess what? Election fraud investigator. So if we do find something, we'll have to turn it over to Teresa Lepore.
Oh.
And this is the kind of thing that we're running into. So it's definitely worth doing, you know. And I know the citizens of this country do feel that way. It's like, you know what? We're in it for the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to give up. We're just going to take as long as it takes, because these people are pretty brazen about some of the stuff they do.
That is pretty amazing. I have to. Now, are you on top of what's happening in Ohio as well?
Yeah. In fact, one of our full-time investigators is actually from Cleveland, and she's back there right now, and she's done some amazing work. And actually, she works with another some of the people that we work with are pretty under the radar. Nobody knows their names, but we know their names, and there's a professor at a university in Ohio that's done some amazing work. There's a lot of problems in Ohio. And I mean, they're all different. There's every county has, you know, a handful of them that are just pretty jaw dropping. You know, 90,000 votes that nobody voted for president. That's a little odd.
That's a lot of no votes for president.
And then 100,000 there's purged votes like crazy in the Cleveland area, Cuyahoga County, where their Diebold made their voter registration software. They put it in right at the last minute before the election, and it seems to make no sense at all who got dropped off and who stayed on. People by the tens of thousands got dropped off the rolls for no reason.
Now, were these people of both political parties and all races and genders?
It takes time to ascertain whether there was a pattern to it, because to find out if those people were of a specific political party requires going through it name by name and cross-referencing it. Mm-hmm. And we're talking, in some cases, about 90,000 names. One of the things that jumped right out at us, though, with the Diebold voter registration computer system used in the Cuyahoga County, which is Cleveland, mm-hmm. some of the update dates where they were updating records in the computer were in the 1800s. Very precocious county, wasn't it?
Obviously, it at least needs some work.
Well, and we're not talking about just a few. We're talking about like 30,000 of them.
Oh, really?
So it was... Cuyahoga's got problems, and I noticed that there was I love this when they call it a clerical error, that suddenly they had to go back and redo the... certification in Toledo, which is Lucas County. Four people got suspended over that. Well, they haven't said what the clerical error was, but there was the clerical error in Pinellas County that turned out to be the numbers were reversed and they gave it to the wrong result came out. So I wouldn't call that a clerical error. I'd call that a real problem.
In Ohio, the Greens and Libertarians have been successful in winning a recount of the votes, including the provisional votes and the pregnant chads and all of that. Meanwhile, there's lawsuits going on up there. The Alliance for Democracy has mm-hmm. filed. Do you know kind of what... I'm told those are different things, that they're
well,
not really related.
Well, that's because there's different causes of action depending on who you are. If you're a citizen... then the Alliance for Democracy is the one for you, because you can file saying that your vote was not counted correctly. And the type standards of proof and so forth that are needed are different for that than they are for a recount. The recount, which was asked for, it's so interesting because the smaller parties, the third and fourth and fifth parties in this election, are showing how important they are. In New Hampshire, we had Ralph Nader file for a recount, and the reason he did it was simply to audit the system, frankly. Mm-hmm. And then we had the Greens and the Libertarians in Ohio file for a recount. Obviously, they didn't think they were going to win, but they wanted to get it documented before the clock ran out that there was a problem. And then Kerry finally did jump in and, you know, raise an eyebrow and say, maybe I'll take a look at this. But if we didn't have these smaller parties, nothing would have happened. It would have just gone straight on ahead. And the thing is, the people want to know. They just want to know that the results are right. I think most people, they may have a very strong opinion politically, but if they knew it was really fair and square, they'll accept the result.
Mm-hmm. Fair recount is still possible? I mean, we have Kenneth Blackwell as Secretary of State.
It's tough. It depends. Blackwell as Secretary of State, he's a problem. He's absolutely like Catherine Harris was.
Well, this is the second time, right, where we've had a Secretary of State in a key state who's also who's in charge of making sure the elections are fair and is also Bush's campaign director in that state.
Yeah, it's really completely inappropriate, and it's amazing. This would never fly in a foreign country. You know, mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter made a statement about this, and he said, you know, his organization goes and monitors elections in foreign countries, and there's no way that they would, you know, say that it was going to pass muster if they have someone who's a complete partisan, who's the one who's administering it. Mm-hmm. And certainly Kenneth Blackwell, he's another one. He's got to be replaced. I mean, he's been making one decision after the next that are just wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. Another thing with Ohio, they were pushing everybody toward these provisional ballots, which means you don't show up on the registration roll for whatever reason, and so you have to vote on this special ballot that they might or might not count. Well, they didn't have any accounting system for these things. Mm-hmm. They don't even know how many they had. You know, you would think if you were going to be doing this and people came in and voted provisionally that it would be in the poll book somewhere, or so that there was some kind of a record at each polling place how many of those things got cast. But no, we to this day we haven't really been able to account for the provisional ballots. Even forget about counting them, we haven't even been able to figure out how many there are.
Mm. I noticed that you have a book out now. Available
well,
for...
I have a book called Black Box Voting. I turned all of the proceeds in the book over to the Black Box Voting nonprofit when it was founded. And It's on reprint right now because it's sold out.
So,
we didn't have a huge run of them to begin with. But, yeah, it's kind of hard to get. It's not in general distribution. But I can tell you that everybody you've heard of has it. President Bush ordered a copy. John Kerry has it. Al Gore's read it. He gave it to Jimmy Carter. So it's very well known among the people who need to know. And I think that is starting to make some headway.
Is it available for download from your
website?
It
is. People can get it for free off my website.
Wow. Some folks might say, well, sure, Bev, someone like you knows how to talk with those Washington types, but the problems are so entrenched and a regular citizen's voice, like mine, hardly ever gets heard, so short of uprooting my whole life to become an activist, it's hard to see anything that I might do or say that would lead to the changes I want to see.
Well, the question is this. If you have kids, do you want your kids to be able to vote or not? Because the vote is the underpinning of every single thing we do and everything we have. It's the underpinning of who owns the water and who fixes the street and who's on the school board and who makes the land use decisions and who decides the military things that we're doing. And so if you know, and when you get into it, you discover it really is in danger right now. You know, I don't want to be alarmist, but it really is in danger right now. And as you start asking questions, use your common sense. It has been amazing to me how regular citizens with common sense go out and start asking questions, and they figure out the things they need to do. And you do the things that come naturally to you. We have a guy who's an advertising exec, and he started developing, he's got a whole new look for our website that will be, once we get a more hack-proof host, which is what we're working on, we're going to be getting a new look. So he's doing advertising-type things for the concept of clean voting. Other people are just going in and saying, let me look at your records and see if they match. It sounds boring. It sounds like, oh, of course they would match, but guess what? A lot of times they don't match. Hmm. And so then it just depends on your skill set, but whatever it is, it really is an important issue. There really is not an issue that's any more important than this.
We've got about 12 minutes left in this 55-minute interview with Bev Harris, nationally recognized expert on the subject of electronic voting and fair elections. She spoke with us on December 9th, 2004, about the ongoing investigations into the 2004 elections. This is American Dream Radio. Have you always been an activist, or is this something?
No. Actually, activist doesn't quite describe me. I've been an investigative writer, and I'm an advocate for clean voting. But I actually don't get involved in rallies and going out and doing demonstrations and all that stuff. We're very much looking for just the facts. Let's find out what's going on. And it is a matter, though, to get the facts, you really have to be pretty relentless. You have to just keep asking the same questions and not take no for an answer. And, it's not easy. Well, the people that were, one of the statements I have on my website today is, doves, sparrows, and other low-flying birds flock together, but eagles soar alone and have to be gathered one at a time. But we are finding those eagles in almost every community in the United States, people who say, hey, I'm going to do something, and I'm not going to wait for someone to tell me what to do. I'm just going to go figure it out because I think it's important.
How did that happen for you?
How did it happen for me?
Well, how did you get into black box voting? How did that
become
your issue?
Well, I was actually, I allocated 20 minutes for this on a lunch hour. I thought I would just go and see who owned the voting machines. And it was I'd read an article by Lynn Landis, who's a writer, and she posed that question, and I thought, I think I can find that out. Well, I did. I found it out in less than 20 minutes, but the first answer was a guy who was actually running for office at the time, and 80% of his votes were going to be counted on the machines of the company that he had run. And so I thought, well, I need to look into this a little more. And this one is one, and anybody who's been in it can attest to it. The more you look into it, the funnier it gets. Or not funny ha-ha, but funny strange it starts to get. You start going, well, this answer isn't right. Well, and every question you ask, you get the wrong answer.
Well, it's funny when you start to go out after something and start to actually see that there's more there than met the eye.
Yeah, and it's a complex story. So people criticize the media and not covering it enough. The radio has been the best about covering it. Print media is getting there, although they're not given enough. There's not really a budget nowadays for real investigative journalism in print media for the most part. Vanity Fair did a good investigative article last spring, but there's a lot of pretty weak investigative journalism where they make a few phone calls, get the other eye, comment from the other side, and go with it. TV is what's really needed, and it's a very tough story to cover on TV because it's complicated. And, in TV, the reality is you got to fit things into a 2-minute slot.
Yeah, well, that doesn't give you much time to explain things.
No, so it's a tough situation. Now, eventually, as more things come out, it may turn out to be that feeding frenzy type deal where they, the news networks just go on and on and on about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is technical enough that the problem with this story is with voting machines especially, it can turn into this boring technobabble debate that nobody can follow. People will say, these machines are insecure, and then they'll say, oh, but we do a logic and accuracy test. And the other side says, well, logic and accuracy test isn't adequate for such and such. And, pretty soon your audience is just, their eyes have glazed over.
Mm-hmm. So trying to bring this to people and actually, that's hard to get on the media and actually get enough time to explain an issue that has any complexity to it.
Right. That's why radio has actually been a very good one, because a lot of people don't read a lot of magazines or newspapers, but radio does have a good wide audience and also allows the time to go into some of the complexities.
Mm-hmm. Well, are there significant dates that we should be paying attention to now for next developments?
Well, certainly, the seating of the Electoral College and then the actual voting of the Electoral College. There are some indications that, and it's kind of a dangerous trend too, but some of the electors may not vote the way they're supposed to. And then the actual inauguration. The inauguration is an interesting date because, you see, up until the inauguration, if fraud was found such that it did change the results of the presidential election, things could still be reversed. There are mechanisms that could happen. After the inauguration, if fraud was found, and this is a big if, but I don't even think that's going to happen, but this is a hypothetical. If fraud was found, after the inauguration, they could not unseat the president unless they found that he knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that's a very different test.
Yes.
And it sounds unlikely unless he, if that was to happen, unless he decided to tape record himself like Richard Nixon did.
I expect that presidents have learned a lesson from that.
I think they probably have decided that's not a good plan.
Well, I think this is great. I don't know if there's anything more that you particularly would like to get at.
Well, we do want to let people know that what we do as an organization is go out and independently investigate these different things. And by independent, that means we can't be supported by a government agency because we'll automatically get stuck with cronyism if we do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we also don't want to saddle ourselves with one or two major donors. Our average donation size is $39, and there's a reason for that. It's very much like the Howard Dean thing was, where we had a lot of little donors, not a few big ones, because it's a pitch for a donation, but it's not a bad idea to kick out, $35 or whatever, because by having a broad base, we are not beholden to any group, and therefore when a citizen says, like they did in Palm Beach, hey, something is wrong here, or in Volusia, or in Riverside, California, then we can come down there and help out and see if we can get these things taken care of. In Riverside, California, that election supervisor is gone. I mean, retired, had to leave to help take care of her father's knee, it turns out.
Oh, my. Yeah, well, it's, in fact, I just saw a quote today from Al Franken when he re-upped his contract with Air America. He said that he just wanted to spend less time with his family.
Yes, That's about it. Yeah, the more time with the family. And I will tell you, we put out a list of election officials that were so, their behavior was so egregious that we just said, the got to be replaced list. We had 8 people on the list, and 5 of them were replaced within 6 months. Because local citizens got the facts and, you know, took it to the councils, and, you know, it wasn't that... The facts were easy to get. That's why we had these people on the list. They were doing things like Ken Blackwell did, where he said, you know, in his case, I mean, terrible behavior. Well, you know, all of these voter registrations, we're going to throw them away because they were printed on the wrong paperweight, which was, of course, given to the voter as a registration form. You know, those kinds of behaviors are just not friendly to democracy.
So that was their own, that was the state had printed those papers and then said they wouldn't take them because of the way.
I think they were perhaps printed by a news agency, the Cleveland Plain Dealer or something like that. But it was, you know, how you, if you get a form and it says this is a voter registration form and it comes from a major news source, you're not going to think, oh, well, it's the wrong paperweight. I guess I shouldn't use it. And, you know, that kind of thing is, there's no good reason to reject those. It's just a method of vote suppression. And so when you have public officials that are engaging in that kind of behavior, we really do need to replace them with someone who's more voter-friendly.
So black box voting is not necessarily working for Democrats.
Not at all. In fact, some of the Democratic organizations got really, really angry with us lately. Because out of the 9 counties that we're really investigating strongly right now, 5 of them actually are Democratic counties. We didn't even realize that because we pick them based on, you know, their audit numbers don't match, things like that. Something's wrong. You know, the citizens are bringing, shredded ballots out of the trash. I mean, those kinds of things. And so, we are investigating several counties that, as it turns out, are democratically controlled. And we had a real smear campaign happening last week from some Democratic organizations. So, you know, but whatever it is, I think that most citizens, they don't want us to be partisan. They may have a particular political persuasion, but they don't want us to investigate in a partisan way, because if we do, it's not going to be worth anything.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, I just wondered whether people may discount you figuring that you're only on one side. But.
Well, that's true, and they would, and it would be rightfully so. And also, I'll tell you, when you start doing these investigations, you never know where they're going to lead. And we've had several of them where we really thought it was indicating one thing, and as you learned more about it, it was like, wow, that it's something, it's still fraud, or it's still bad, or but it's leading in a completely different direction than we thought. And with this type of work, it is what it is. You've got to accept that the facts are the facts and not try to make them into something or spin them.
You know, I had one other thing I had thought of that I wanted to ask you, and that I had heard you talk before about the security of absentee ballots as opposed to people going to the polls. And
right.
Is that, do people make their vote more likely to be counted if they send it in and, as an absentee ballot?
Well, if you have a touchscreen county with no paper ballot, you probably have a little better chance if it's an absentee ballot. But now in my county, we have an optical scan system, so it's the fill-in-the-bubble and thing, and it's, we have a paper ballot. I would never vote absentee because it is a much less secure way to vote than at the polling place. There's
less
a lot
secure.
More attack points, and there's well, they could set it up so that it's secure. But I don't know of any location that has set it up so that it is secure, and there's all kinds of things. And if you look at the history of elections, even the recent history and even this one, you know, they seem to pull these absentee ballots out of their back pocket at the last minute when they want a different result.
Interesting.
They just, in fact, that happened in Palm Beach. They suddenly found 700 more, and all 700 went for one candidate.
Really, all 700
all
of the missing
of them.
Ballots.
Now, the candidates were running 50-50, but all 700. And it turns out it was exactly the margin he needed to win.
What a coincidence.
Well, isn't it a coincidence?
Well, Bev, thank you so much for coming to visit. I mean, this really has been a delight.
Well, good. I'm glad you, I really appreciate you having me on.
You've been listening to Bev Harris, Executive Director of BlackBoxVoting.org. And a nationally recognized expert on the subject of electronic voting and fair elections. She is also the author of the book Black Box Voting, Ballot Tampering in the 21st Century. To learn more, find Bev Harris's website at blackboxvoting.org. While you're there, you can order a copy of her book or download a free copy online. My name is Jerry Crantlin. This December 9th, 2004 interview is a production of American Dream Radio. Find us on the web at americandreamradio.org.